Thank you. morning. You are watching The Program with Ted Rollins and Marl Thomas. It's Wednesday, April 29th, 2026. Good morning, JT. How are you?
I'm doing okay. What's going on, man?
I thought you were muted for a second. Not much, not much.
How you doing, Ted? I'm
a little sad because I already renewed my passport last year, which means I may not be eligible for the new Trump passport that comes out. Have you heard about this?
There's a Trump passport? I don't want a Trump passport. I just want a
Can you imagine?
I don't want a Trump passport. Like, I don't want to walk around with a Trump sticker on it, like Made in America, some insane, crazy.
Oh, it's worse than a Trump sticker. It's literally a passport that has Trump's face, like, embossed on it. And it has, like, a little, it's super MAGA. It's for anybody who applies for a passport in the Washington, D.C. metro area, that's you, in or around July 4th to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States of America, and they will get a special Trump passport. Can you imagine, like, well, ladies and gentlemen, we have now arrived in Riyadh International Airport. Please have your passports ready. It'd be like, oh, shit.
You know, it's humiliating. I don't want that passport. I don't want Trump's special passport.
I might just sort of, like, if my passport was expiring, I might be like, you know, I'm going to cruise right through and wait till, like, next year. And maybe I don't need to go anywhere this year. Not to mention, maybe I can't go anywhere this year anyway because there won't be any jet fuel.
There's that, which is what it sounds like it's going to be considering what Trump is deciding to do. I don't want to step on the stories, but I don't know if you started reporting out of Reuters.
Go ahead.
That it is, the way it reads is fascinating in itself. Because, you know, you've worked at a radio station. Mm-hmm. And you saw how, like, when you're covering world news, you get to see how individual countries talk about what their leadership is doing in the country. Because all news is effectively a political weapon. There's no such thing as neutrality in news.
Right.
Reuters is reporting it in this weird way. So they're saying the Trump administration was looking at two options, one to escalate or to leave, to effectively declare victory and walk. We won, we accomplished our objectives, we're out. Mm-hmm. But the reporting makes it very clear that from the Trump administration's point of view, that declaration of victory doesn't stop Iran from saying, we obviously won. And the White House acknowledges on some level that Iran is right in that, because the White House is looking at fall down consequences. Meaning it's one thing to say, hey, we won, we're out. It's another thing to have realities on the ground. And those realities on the ground is, A, we have to Strait of Hormuz. B, we kept the superpower from destroying us. Meaning we had political consistency to be able to maintain ourselves against the superpower. And C, it emboldens us. Meaning groups and all of these other things in there. This is the way the U.S. is looking at it. And my point is, the fact that the U.S. is looking at it in old terms gets across that the U.S. lost. Meaning, regardless of Trump lying to the American public, he knows, 3 a.m. between him and his God, that he failed. And they can't deal with it. In which case, they say, okay, we can't do that either. And so their thing is, let's extend the blockade. So we are going to have the blockade indefinitely. Now, take it with a grain of salt. Trump can turn around tomorrow and attack. But for all intents and purposes, the reporting that's coming out is that the Trump administration doesn't like the option of escalation because hashtag they tried that, and doesn't like the option of walking away. And so they're going with the third option, option 2.5, I think you called it, continue the blockade indefinitely. That's amazing. So yeah, there may be no jet fuel. There may be no fertilizer. there may be none of these things, right?
No, I mean, like, yeah, you could, or Americans could easily fly to Europe, let's say, but they might not be able to get back because there's no jet fuel to get back. I agree with you. I mean, obviously, the facts on the ground are undeniable. I mean, declaring victory and walking away is not tenable when there are repercussions that hit your own country. And, you know, the fact is the Strait of Hormuz remains under blockade. And of course, you know, the fact that, I mean, Trump's blockade is only making that blockade worse, right? So he's only making the consequences for the United States worse. So, you know, what's going to happen this summer? I just got gas yesterday. It was $4.19 a gallon. It's like, you know, before all this started 6 weeks ago, my local same gas station was $2.79. That's a big percentage increase. It's going to keep going up. And so what's going to happen by like July, peak travel season in the United States? All Americans are on the road. You know, can you imagine filling up an RV? Like, that's terrifying. Or even a Ford F-150. I mean, I see people like go and get $150, $200 worth of gas. This was before, right? Now it's going to be $250, $300, $400. So the those consequences are just undeniable. The stock market's going to finally wake up and realize that what happens in Asia affects us because we buy all of our shit from Asia. The global markets are going to tank. The IMF already sees this coming. Yeah, there's no denying it. It's just like you just can't. This isn't like, hey, look, we liberated Afghan women. We're out. Bye. That's not true, but nobody's around to see it. Right. This is like right here.
Yes, it's affecting all of us. And you know that. God, man, I'm glad you mentioned that. I forgot who I was talking to. I think it was Garland the other day. Why haven't we seen this priced into the market? Because, you know, in normal circumstances, when these guys are like speculators, are looking at this stuff, they're like, okay, this is coming. And oftentimes they were pricing it to the market before you even hit. And my thing was like, why haven't they priced this in?
It's a good question.
Well, I saw a financial guy yesterday who broke this down and basically pointed out that Trump has no credibility. And so from the speculator's point of view, Trump always chickens out. Mm-hmm. And so the thought is Trump will walk. This gets so bad, Trump walks. And he pointed out, he was like, that's not the same thing. Like, meaning, it's one thing for Trump to say, I'm putting on a tariff. I'm putting on a sanction. Trump could always say, I'm removing the sanction. I'm giving a sanction way before the order comes through. I'm putting sanctions back on. I'm removing the tariff. I'm putting the tariff back on. That's easy. That's a legal fig leaf. This is a war. And the reality of it is, you've involved yourself in something that you can't really extricate yourself from in an easy way, in a way that you can turn on and turn off a tariff. You're stuck. And because you're stuck, the question becomes, what does the president do? Well, now at this point, the president said, I'm going to blockade indefinitely. So the market has to start pricing that stuff in because it's becoming clear at this point that this isn't going anywhere anytime soon. I mean, Trump could change his mind tomorrow, and maybe they think that, but I don't think that's the way it works. I think you're dealing with things beyond the market. I think you're dealing with psychology. You're talking about a president who, under normal circumstances, presidents are loathe to look bad. But this guy, this one, even worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Trump's, I mean, look, what you said, you're right. I mean, look, what Trump said and what said, does and says and does at this point does not matter. Let's be clear here. If Cole Allen had he succeeded in putting a hole between Donald Trump's eyes, the market is still headed the direction that it's heading. Even if J.D. Vance calls up the Ayatollah and says, I am so sorry, we are bad, we apologize. You know, we want to be friends.
We surrender.
Yeah, we surrender. We're going to become a Shia Islamic country. We love you. All that stuff, right? Like, even if that, you know, you can come and occupy us. It doesn't matter. None of it matters because what's already happened is that it's, you know, the effect is already going to be with us for at least 6 to 12 months, right? I mean, the fact is oil supplies are now down. It's a slow-moving train, right? I mean, these tankers that just got through the Strait of Hormuz before all this started, they're still, you know, unloading, and that oil is being slowly refined, and it's entering the marketplace. This is a matter of months, many months. So we're not really going to start to feel the pain. I mean, they're feeling the pain in countries where they don't have a lot of advanced supplies. They don't have reserves, places like Vietnam and, Myanmar, Singapore. But they're going to start feeling it in places that do have reserves because reserves run out. Reserves are not. So, yeah, it doesn't matter. And Trump is irrelevant here, amazingly.
At this point, yeah. Meaning it's coming either way. Winter's coming.
Yeah, winter is coming, no question. All right, so let's talk. So today we're going to talk about the summit, the climate summit, being held in Colombia, being hosted by outgoing President Gustavo Petro, who basically is warning the world that unless the world gets rid of its dependence on fossil fuels, that we will be heading towards barbarism, the collapse of capitalism, and or fascism, lot to talk about there. The FCC seems to be retaliating against ABC basically because of Jimmy Kimmel's joke about Melania
What was the joke about Melania?
So Jimmy Kimmel a couple days ago said, "Oh, she has the glow of an expectant widow," and so this was following the assassination attempt at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And I guess there's some doubt about when this joke was written, when it was recorded. He says this was all sort of conceptualized before Saturday's events, and that the timing was unfortunate. But whatever. So we know that the president drew a bead on Jimmy Kimmel, a year ago or so. Disney owns ABC. So basically, Disney owns 8 stations that are all going to have their broadcast licenses. They weren't due for review, but now they will be reviewed. And so this is obviously an effort to chill ABC and encourage them to maybe fire Jimmy Kimmel. And then last but not least, our main story, Cole Allen, the suspect in the White House Correspondents' Dinner shooting, there's a big profile of him in the New York Times. And basically, I heard similar things on NPR and elsewhere, that politically, he's not really wild and crazy. I mean, you and I remember basically came of age in a time when a political violence came out of mostly the far right, but also out of the far left to a secondary extent. You think about the Red Brigades in the 1970s, kidnapping, John Paul Getty III and stuff like that. Basically, Cole Allen be a Democrat. He donated $25 to Kamala. It's hard to say that he's even as far left as, say, a Bernie Sanders. So, and Luigi Mangione also wasn't very radical politically. So I guess the question is now, what does it mean when someone has relatively centrist, moderate, mainstream, corporatist, maybe not corporatist, but mainstream politics, and resorts to radical actions? I have thoughts about that. But basically, that's the rundown, and we can start where anywhere you want. I would start with Cole Allen, but what
do you want? Let's start with Cole Allen then, because that's an interesting question. I mean, like I said, when I read the manifesto, I thought to myself, this is rational.
Uh-huh.
I
agree. I did not disagree. Here's the thing. The only words I could have taken issues with is, Trump, he didn't want to be associated with Trump. The words Trump were implied here, that he was a traitor, a pedophile, and a rapist. I mean, to be clear, I'm not, I'm far from convinced that Donald Trump is a pedophile. I'm far from convinced of that. In fact, I don't think it's true. I think he's a pedophile enabler. I think, in terms of him being a rapist, I mean, he's grabby. I don't know. I don't think there's hard evidence that he's a rapist that could come out. And in terms of being a traitor, he's a grifter. He's an emoluments fucker. He's definitely betraying his base, but I don't know that he's selling out our national security to foreign agents and working for an enemy nation. I don't think that's true. But anyway, the point is the rest of it. I agreed with every single word that Cole Allen wrote.
I don't have an issue with them calling Trump a pedophile, if I'm being bluntly honest with you. You're enabling a pedophile, or if you are actively doing it, to me, those things, same difference, if you want to say, in that case. Mm-hmm. They are throwing their bodies out to protect the list of people who have been raping children. Put it in context, right?
That's true.
And Trump has been doing any and everything in his power to prevent that information from effectively coming out, in addition to many of the other Republicans that are in Congress. So if he wants to say pedophile enabler or pedophile, okay, fair enough. I take your point. As a point to traitor, yes. Full stop. We can fight on that.
Well, go. Make your case.
No difference on that one. Because look, man, what is in the interest of America? And I often make this argument that what takes place in the context of Israel is U.S. policy. But truth of the matter is there is a feedback mechanism where there is some level of influence in regards to our country. When Trump gave that notion of why he was attacking Iran, Israel was first and foremost in his rationale for it. So you're attacking another country that is not in our best interest for foreign power. Not to mention Miriam Adelson giving him $100 million. What are you doing for that money? Policy after policy after policy went in line with not Americans' first interests, whether it's First Amendment or otherwise. It went with Israel's interests. So we're going to shut up Americans. By the way, Joe Biden was doing this too, to a lesser degree, when he was beating up protesters at universities and colleges. When Donald Trump is saying, we don't like you talking about Israel, so we're not letting you into the country. I have a First Amendment right to do that. Like, I'm making the point of saying, if you are taking policy that is explicitly not in the interest of America, and you're doing it at the behest, seemingly, of a foreign power because you were paid, meaning they have influence because they have their hooks in you, that is against my interest as an American. And yeah, I would go so far as to say that's a traitor. Even this notion of trying to overthrow the government, I think that's traitorous. I mean, treasonous, if not traitorous. But
I mean, look. I don't disagree with the word you said. He absolutely is in bed with foreign interests, and particularly Israel. These are against American interests. I mean, you know, I guess I'm being maybe pedantic. I'm kind of stuck on the sort of constitutional definition of treason.
Fair enough.
And, you know, I mean, treason has a very specific, very limited meaning, right? But if you basically mean like sucking foreign cock at the expense of your own people, yeah, Donald Trump's guilty. You know, guilty is sin. And, you know, and certainly Cole Allen's not required to have a legalistic definition of the word.
Exactly.
Traitor, he can use the, you know, the Merriam-Webster definition, and that's totally fine. That's sort of like when people say, oh, it's not censorship unless the government's doing it. Well, that's legalistic under the First Amendment, but that's not true, right? Censorship is just like, editing is a form of censorship. So that's according to the dictionary. So, all right, point taken. I have a tendency to get stuck
No. You're perfectly right. No, you're right. If you can easily say, hey, man, this is the definition of so-and-so. So fair enough. I accept that. I guess it's interesting because I read the document and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you can communicate a problem. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, what do you do with the problem? You know, it's like, okay, I need to, there's a bug in my house. I know I need to blow my house up. Okay, the bug in your house is identification of a problem. I don't need to blow the house up, right?
Right. Well, that is the question, right? So let's get serious here. I think many Americans, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of Americans, but I'd say at least a third, maybe half, maybe more, understand that Donald Trump represents a significant problem, right? And Trumpism represents a problem. That things have gone too far in certain ways. And so that there should be remedies. But the fact is, there are, everywhere you look, and he said this in his manifesto, and he's not wrong. Cole Allen looks around and is like, well, who the fuck's going to do it? Who's going to take out the trash, right? Like, right. I'm 31 years old. I see no sign of this happening anytime soon. And he's not wrong, right? I mean, you would want, this should be remedied at the polls.
Yes.
But the fact is the Democratic Party, even now, seems completely unwilling to even consider allowing the nomination of a person who might have a chance of defeating a Republican like Donald Trump, right? Like, they just don't want to do that. They want to have a corporatist whose policies wouldn't be that different from Trump's, just their attitude and their style would be a little
manner,
different. Their messaging would be different, their manner, right? So then it's like, okay, 25th Amendment, we know J.D. Vance isn't going to invoke it, although he should. It was written for expressly this kind of situation. You know that Congress isn't going to impeach the president because Congress isn't Democratic. And even if Congress were Democratic, where are you going to get to a two-thirds conviction in the Senate for removal? You're not going to. You're just not going to. So who's going to take care of it? And when you realize you're looking around helplessly, I mean, there's something kind of ridiculous about a nation of 330 million people that can't do something as simple as removing a shitty president. And so that's when a would-be assassin's mind starts to think, maybe one man can take care of this. To be clear, I don't think that's a good idea, and I don't recommend it, but it's very understandable. And and so that's why you take a guy like this who doesn't appear to be mentally ill, is very well-educated, by all accounts, a very kind and humane person, a popular teacher, articulate, funny, seems great, seems like a great guy. And he's not a fucking nut. And he does something that in the past we would have said puts him in the nut box. That's fucking interesting as shit. And I mean, I think Luigi's a little quirkier, but still more on the normie side.
But is it a rational act?
It might
That's
be.
a fascinating question. Like, meaning, is it a rational act? Like, look, just to cover myself on this, I'm not saying somebody should go and shoot the president.
No.
Just to be very clear, I don't want, you to snatch the shit off the air
Yes,
immediately.
nobody should ever engage in political violence.
I wouldn't go that far.
Except
I
in the
would.
case of a revolution.
I agree with you. It's interesting as shit. Like, I find myself, when they threw a shoe at George Bush, I remember thinking to myself, what the fuck? What are you throwing a shoe at a president for? As much as I hated George Bush, I still thought, hey, that's outrageous. That's a president, right? Like,
Right.
meaning, it was so ingrained in me that my initial reaction was just to recoil at it, despite the fact that George
Just
Bush
like I
was a
said,
horrible human
about
being.
Reagan in 81. Yeah.
Right. That I thought should be hung by the throat in front of the population, so that shit wouldn't happen again. When they tried to take the bullet, for, when they tried to shoot Trump the first time, I thought, oh, that's outrageous. What are you doing? And after this, my thought was, oh, well, okay. I didn't care. There was nothing in me that cared.
Yeah, I don't know that I might jury nullify him, if I was on Coles.
Same here. I would be
Yeah.
like, well, I have no evidence that this guy did it, right? Or the very least, I'll say
He was obviously not there. He was somewhere
I'm
else.
doing it.
He was arrested on the spot. They took off his shirt. Yeah, I know, but
It's
what does
so
that mean, really?
interesting that we've gotten to this point as a population, whereas the president used to have a certain amount of prestige in that office, and such prestige that this would be unthinkable for people to be okay with this,
Was
and
it
yet.
RFK who said those who make peaceful change impossible, make violent change inevitable or something like that?
That wasn't RFK. That was like a founding father or something, I thought.
But the point is, it's an obvious consideration, right? I mean, if you don't create, if you don't allow, if you create a pressure cooker, right? If you put people in an untenable situation, they're going to freak. Some of them are going to freak out. I mean, the
Yes.
system has become all-encompassing. They control the media to a factor that's never been controlled before. I mean, I look at myself, right, at the space that used to be in mainstream media for people like me that's gone evaporated. There's no way I could have an op-ed in the New York Times anymore. I mean, and yet I used to be in there all the time. There's all sorts of other examples of that. What the Democratic Party did to Bernie Sanders, we can't allow that. The way that they tried to jack up Zohran Mamdani, and they still are trying to figure out some way to get rid of him. Even though truth is, he's kind of a moderate dude. I mean, I guess you're going to radical. The irony here is that if this level of control is what's radicalizing the population, it's the very thing that the elites don't want, they're creating.
But see, I would argue it's not radical. I mean, look, a lot of this stuff depends on the lens that you're looking at it, right? If I'm looking at it through a lens of self-preservation, then I don't do that. Because A, I don't think it's going to work. B, I think I'm going to get killed or shot. C, it's not going to change anything. Hell, they may even use me to further their own agenda. If I look at it through the lens of morality, well, that's different, right? I mean, because let's put it in context. Within the context of this administration, and hell, you could have did this during Joe Biden's administration. If I am somebody who is morally inclined, there's some people who set themselves on fire. Right, like the guy who was protesting Gaza, who went out near DC and basically, self-immolation. There's that, which is also a statement, but that statement is internal. It's like I'm doing this to myself in order to make a statement. But the rub is nobody's gonna really care. Within a couple of days, they're gonna sweep your ashes and they're gonna move on. That sucks to say, but it's true. I don't even remember the guy's name. From the standpoint of a more moral actor who says this government has gone off the rails. You're murdering people in Venezuela. You're murdering people in Iran. You're murdering people in Gaza. You've just blown up a school, a bunch of schoolgirls. And in the context of Gaza, that's a genocide. What do you do with that as a moral person? It's that. Like the moment, meaning the moment that that's your headspace, is the act rational through that context?
Right.
No,
it's the question of like, you know, as a New Yorker, when I would go to work every day and commute and step over the homeless people in the subway in order to, I mean, that's what everybody did. So therefore it was normal, but was it rational and sane and moral? No. I mean, as a human being, we need to help each other. We have to, we're called upon by every ethical and religious guideline in our society to do that, but we don't. So, I mean, we are literally an insane society. So, I mean, the question is someone like Cole Allen, I mean, is he the normal one? And are we all fucking insane?
Yeah, that's my point. It's the lens that you look at it through. Most people look at it through the lens of self-preservation with competing interests of, I don't like this. I'm going to try to do this in the context of keeping myself safe and secure. But the moment that you say something needs to change, and nobody is going to do anything. I think the problem with the logic is that you doing that doesn't change anything because the issue is not Trump. The same argument could have been made for Joe Biden. Easy. Right?
Yeah.
If you could say, okay, well, Joe Biden wasn't murdering Venezuelan fishermen. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but he was blowing up, you know, people with drones.
Children, women. Yeah, exactly.
We have a bunch of questions we should probably get to here. Let's see. Okay, Flanderina, did we see the DropSite News latest update on Canary Mission? They exposed the identities of five of the highest paid contributors and how their connections to the Wexner Fund, government officials, et cetera. No, but Robbie, can we reach out to the whoever at DropSite did this article and see if they'll come on?
Yeah, I'll reach out to them.
All right, thank you.
They do good work.
And Canary Mission is the doxing outfit, the Zionist doxing outfit. Andre, what do you mean, Jamarl, Trump is God, LOL?
What?
I don't know what that means.
Trump is God? God Emperor Trump. No. If so, no, I said 3 in between Trump and his God. That's what I said. I think that's what I said.
Thanks, Jabari Media, for the $10 donation. Did you see the BPD podcast episode with John Kiriakou? Bette David grilled him because Bette David called him a Zionist. I felt for John because he needed to get a pardon. I felt like he would have given an argument.
Explain that one more time. So yes. John, wait, they called John a Zionist?
Bette David grilled him. I fell for John because he needed. I don't know. I don't really get it. Cause first of all, I didn't see it. I bet it's more like John called Bette David a Zionist. I don't know. I don't know. Sorry. If you can clarify, we'll add that up. Thanks for the $2 from Count Zero. The £2. The IMF, the lagging indicator. Jack Samuels. Thoughts on King... Oh, thanks for the donation. $4. Thoughts on King Charles's speech to Congress. Pretty remarkable to see him teach our Congress civics and American morals to stand up against tyranny. You know, I have problems with the fact that we even have the King of England. Like, that we even have diplomatic relations with England is weird to me, considering we had a revolution against these people. Why aren't they... I don't know. It's weird as shit. I mean, it would be like Algeria having the president of France coming and talking shit to them. Like, why?
You know what's funny? I said the exact same thing. I was like, we had a revolution to kick this motherfucker out, right?
So why is he here?
And then to come and give a lesson to us talking about Article 5 and then we got to gear up. You
it's
know,
like, fuck off, dick. Yeah.
That's what I said. King Charles needs to go the fuck home.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this is where my American nationalism kicks in. Hey, let's see what the bigger nationalist here has to say. Robbie, what did you think of that?
Well, I mean, none of the countries in Europe are real countries anyway. They're all vassals. If you have 200,000 foreign troops occupying you.
Yeah.
Seriously, what vote exactly is it that you have to say? And as far as that goes, you can put the entire British army into a soccer stadium. Sorry, you don't really get to dictate terms, especially because if we wanted to, we could turn your country off in a day. Yes. You can go your old, wrinkled, bald, hemorrhoid-smelling self right on back home and never come back.
Yeah. Frip keeper.
Yeah, and go back home. Fuck off. You know?
As far as Jabari was talking about, a couple months ago, John called PBD, Patrick McDavid, a Zionist, and said he was a supporter of the Shah here on the program before he left. And he walked that back is what the comment is about. Oh. So
that's our Zionists.
So
now he seen them have the fights on air. I mean, I can't point to the episode, but I left with a clear point of view that these guys were Zionists.
100%. Well, 100%.
John walked that back. I mean, John should have had that fight.
I mean, listen, I would have, but on the flip side, though, I don't have the friends that John has. The only friends I have are like right here. All right. I mean, my circle is very, very small.
That's pretty presumptive, Robbie. I'm
a little short here.
You're my brother with a tan. I mean, that's just what it is, right?
But yeah, you got a good point. I mean, and sometimes you don't always feel like having those fights, so fair enough.
Yeah, well, I mean, some people, I mean, not everyone's like me. I mean, if you're at Gettysburg on the third day, what you go up the middle. That's me. Even if you know you're going to lose, so be it. Duty is mine, consequences is God's. If you have someone like John Kerouac, who literally lost everything, the government destroyed his life, destroyed his health, destroyed everything.
Yes.
I can see why you would try to play nice. And maybe have a chance whenever you're in your 60s to maybe to build yourself a life. I'm going to extend the man grace. I get it. I don't care. I'm more than happy to strike the match and burn it all down because I don't have anything anyway. Well, what do you have to take?
That's the
difference.
And by the way, I'm not bashing you out for it.
Sure. But a lot of people though do because they say, well, you're walking this back, you're backpedaling. Maybe he is. What I would say is if you have the arrows in your chest that man has, then you can start throwing your rocks. Until then, shut your face.
John has gone through some shit.
Yes.
I don't know if the audience knows, but Jesus. I mean, it's not just the public stuff. It's like even stuff behind the scenes. It's just fucking intense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen. Anyone who watches this show, just go look at the numbers from a month ago compared to what they are right now. If there's anyone that should be pissed off, it's me and Ted because we're the ones who are eating the sandwich, right?
Yeah.
That being said, I don't begrudge him what he's done. I don't begrudge him any success that he gets. I hope that he gets all the success he's able to. I think he'll stay true to his principles. I truly do. We talked about that when he visited us here in Kalispell on Monday. I told him, don't forget the people who got you where you are. And I said, you need someone in your ear who's willing to tell you, who's not these Hollywood types, John, you're making a mistake. And I think that he's willing to do that.
I've always liked John. He's been very affable. He's been very kind. He's an interesting guy. I wish him the best. I mean, as you point out, you guys work with him. I didn't get the opportunity to work with him on this show. I just work with him at the network. And so, yeah, if there's anything, I mean, from my point of view, I like John. And I want the best for him. In fact, I want the best for pretty much everybody. Except my enemies and bad people.
I mean.
But I don't define John in that box. I like him.
I mean, if I ever got the invitation, which would never happen, to go to Patrick McDavid's podcast, I would look him in his face. I'd tell him he's a slime ball. I would tell him he's a sick son of a bitch. I would tell him he's a wholly owned subsidiary of Israel. If you don't like it, don't invite me back. But I wouldn't walk him back because that's just my temperament.
Yeah.
John's a much nicer person than I am.
He is.
I have a very.
I don't know if he's nicer than you. I'm just saying he's nice.
I mean, my biggest problem, honestly, is I have this very unfortunate tendency of telling people what I think. And sometimes that serves me well. More often than not, it doesn't, especially if you live in a country where no one ever says what they mean.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny. My ex-girlfriend, she was Austrian. And she was looking up cultural stuff for Americans, like basically things that are different between America and Austria. And one of the things that like royally fucked with her was that Americans can be very affable and nice when they're dealing with you. But Americans would know when another American is not being serious about something, but just putting it out there for effect, just like kind of as a lubrication between the way people are engaging. It's not really honest, but it's not really a lie. It's kind of just there as a placeholder. It's like, yeah, maybe we should go out and get lunch one day. Really? Yeah, let's go out and get lunch, et cetera. That's never going to happen, right? And she was like, when somebody would tell her that, she would take it as literally. And when it wouldn't happen, she was like, I can't believe it. They just lied to me, blah, blah, blah. It's like, ish, grease the wheels.
Yeah. One thing also I want to point out, Ted, you lost everything too with your fight against the LA Times. And you were slandered. I mean, not, you didn't go to prison, but I mean, you paid a price. Wow. And
I did.
No, I'll go away because I mean, this is not about me. But I'm willing to tell you right now because I'm seeing some of the comments. If you're my friend, right, wrong, or neutral, I will always have your back, like to the freaking hill,
Robbie.
And I will happily help you bury a body if you're my friend. That's why my circle of friends is very, very small.
Good to know.
Yeah,
everybody needs that guy, right? It's like, hey, don't ask any questions. Just come, bring your car, bring your show.
That's always been kind of my judgment for a friend, right? Like, if your friend is, let's say, nationally humiliated, and you don't necessarily have to side with them in public, but you're still their friend. You still call, right. You help them. If you show up at my house and I hear police helicopters, and you're like, Ted, don't ask any questions. I need the key to your car and every dollar of cash you have in the house. I'd be like, go with God. Here you go.
It's like Al Collins, right? Yeah. It's like, hey, man, I need you to drive me to so-and-so. It's like, okay, Juice, let's get in the car.
It's like the Cuomo brothers. The one who worked for CNN, Jake, Chris. When he got railroaded for protecting his brother, is like, right on you. I don't agree with that guy on nothing. I think he's just a complete turd. But the fact that he stuck up for his brother and he went to the mat for him, it's like, good on you. Exactly.
Firstly, David Kaczynski, who sold out his brother, the Unabomber, fuck him.
Not for sure. I have 8 brothers and sisters. And I'm going to go away after this because we have a show to do. And I don't say this lightly. You don't get to pick the people who share your last name, but sometimes you get to pick your family. Ted Rawl is my family. If he called me tomorrow and said, Robbie, I need your help. I need you here in New York. I would get in that piece of crap truck of mine, and my little white ass would be there.
Robbie. Likewise.
That's sweet. That's so sweet.
We're so gay. Okay.
In a non-queer kind of way.
All right, we have an ad here. Let's see if I can make this one work. It's not even for coffee. So let's see if I can make this one.
What? Listen, if I had a coffee, I'd be doing it.
Here we go. Access Med, powered by Trinova Health, is a revolutionary telehealth service that offers fast, free online evaluations and fast, free home delivery of customized compounded medications, offering custom weight loss support, ivermectin therapy, hair restoration, cosmetic rejuvenation, custom ED treatments, and more. You can complete your visit in less than 10 minutes, and there's no subscriptions or recurring fees ever. We've made getting started easier than ever. Simply follow the link, choose the product or treatment you're interested in, and then complete a quick online evaluation. Within days, your custom meds will arrive to your door. Mention Rumble in the coupon code and get 10% off your first treatment.
Nice.
Good to know.
All right. That's good to know. Yeah. And let's see. We have some more. Comments here. Okay. Here we go. Manchild, are they radicalizing, or is the middle class just training in networking breakfasts for tactical brunch and using LinkedIn as a recruiting platform to circle back on a revolution?
It's the term radicalized that gets me. If we were in a normal political space. And and what the hell does normal mean in this context, right? If you were
Eastern European, let's say.
Well, let's say you're 1980s. Mm-hmm. Let's say in the 1980s. Oh, that doesn't even make sense, because they tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan. Are they being radicalized? Let's start there. Do you think they're being radicalized in this sense? Like, is it radical what this guy did?
Well, there's radical politics, and then there's, which clearly he doesn't subscribe to. Right. I mean, this does not sound like a man who wants to overthrow the capitalist system and establish the dictatorship of the proletariat, or conversely, on the far right, create a fascist state, right? So it's neither.
He's a liberal, right.
He's a liberal. The tactic, obviously, assassination is a radical tactic. Okay. Right. So, I mean, it's the difference. That's what's interesting. Typically, we've been used to radical politics and tactics and strategies all going together. And right. Here, they're not. That detachment is what's interesting. I mean, there are not a lot of examples of,
normal politics.
Really true. John Wilkes Booth, Robbie would know more about this than me. John Wilkes Booth wasn't really politically radical, right?
Hmm. No, he wasn't. It was just, I think what broke him.
Lee Harvey Oswald was. He was a communist.
I think really what pushed Wilkes over the edge was Sherman's March to the Sea. Just that total war. Like, that is the first time in modern history where there was ever an army that.
This is a moderate person reacting to a mainstream. To the political class, in this case, the Lincoln administration, that is itself radical.
Yeah, well, because that army waged war against the civilian population, which up until that, you can make the case maybe Vicksburg, but Sherman, though, took it to a whole other level. Like, he turned butchery into an art, and that's what pushed Wilkes over the edge.
But see, I think violent countries that are in violent actions effectively create violent people. I mean, like, the moment that the government, I get it, right? The government likes to say we have the dispensational force or the priority on force. Yeah, but ish. I mean, that is given. Like, I have to agree with that. And yes, you can beat me because you have that proportional overwhelming force. Fair enough. But that doesn't mean that that's always going to be that way. And it doesn't necessarily mean that if I don't necessarily ascribe to it, or if I take your logic for the way you kill people, that I may just say, hey, if you can do it, why can't I? Meaning, if it's okay for you to murder people abroad, if it's okay for you to murder people in mass, by the tune of thousands, hundreds of thousands.
Which is radical and insane.
What's that? But is that radical? Like, meaning, is that...
Well, it's extreme.
I don't feel like I'm making sarcasm.
It's extreme.
Well, for example, Jamarl, you live here in the South. No,
yes.
Black eyed peas are a staple. Do you know why that is?
No clue.
So black eyed peas used to only be fed to livestock because they thought they weren't, you know, edible by humans. The whole reason why they started being ate by people is because when Sherman went through, I mean, they burned the farms. It didn't matter if it was a white farm. It didn't matter if it was, they destroyed everything. It was total war against the civilian population in Georgia and South Carolina.
Right.
The reason why black-eyed peas are a staple in the South is because the only food that the Yankees didn't burn were the black-eyed peas because they thought they were unedible. So the survivors of that march
subsisted,
boiled them,
on those.
And they lived off of them. And that's why on New Year's Day, in Southern families, you have collards and black-eyed peas.
It's
because without the black-eyed pea, you would have literally starved to death. That's really? That's the kind of war that Sherman waged. I mean, we can look at Israel and say, you know, this is what you're doing, and both things can be correct. I mean, John Wilkes Booth lived in D.C. through the entirety of the war. He only shot Lincoln after Lincoln allowed Sherman to do that. And let's be clear, Lincoln allowed Sherman to do that.
Oh, 100%. No, there's no question historically about that at all.
Like, if you are a rational human being, I guess what I'm trying to say is the radicalization is not the act. The radicalization is willing to give yourself up for the act.
100%.
We're looking at the world rationally. Your politics aren't, like, insane. It's not like, Aliens are going to come and Space Jesus is going to do something. It's not that.
Right. It's not the Hale-Bopp comet. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the Hale-Bopp comet. Like, I got to kill the president in order to go to heaven. And it's not
my $5 bill with my black sneakers. Yeah.
No, it was pure revenge. I mean, there's a reason why he said, thus be the tyrants, when he jumped onto the stage at Ford Theater.
Well, that's, of course, supposedly what, what's his name? Brutus says to Caesar, but in the Shakespeare version of the assassination, right? Not really. Yeah. So it will always be for tyrants, right? Or isn't that's what it means? Sinc semper tyrannis. Isn't that on the flag of like Virginia or someplace?
Yeah,
it is. Virginia State flag.
Semper tyrannis, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so by the way, Sir Bikes-a-Lot, being a centrist is being radical because it gives us the current situation we're dealing with right now. Well, if radical is negative. Please, JT, read The Twilight of Pluto since you're into astrology.
What? Wait, say it again. What's the book?
It's called The Twilight of Pluto. Andrew Barry, I made a mistake that David was called Designs. They played a clip from the showroom. John called it. I think Zionist is. I think Jabari is using Siri to do his comments because I do that. And then sometimes, so I kind of recognize, I'm like, Designs. What does that sound like? Must be Zionist. Let's see. King Charles was friends with Jimmy Savile. It says Frank Field. Thanks for the donation. That is true. Manchild, Disney gets an early renewal bill for one Kimmel monologue. How many decades of license stripping would Trump owe if we applied the Carr standard to his own daily rhetoric?
Good, we should talk about that. Jimmy, come up.
Let's do it.
What do you? Okay, go into the start. Just as a
preface. Well, so Brendan Carr, he's the chairman of the FCC. And he appears to have be weaponizing the FCC just as much as Kash Patel is weaponizing the FBI. And basically, he is one day after Trump and Melania took issue with Kimmel's joke about Melania looking forward to becoming a widow. Which, by the way, I think is probably true. My biggest problem with Jimmy Kimmel is that he's really a literalist. He's not really a comedian. But anyway, he's just a commentator. Basically Disney, which owns ABC, was told that they're going to have all of, 8 of their broadcast licenses reviewed prematurely. It sounds obviously like a classic, like Nixonian example of like, oh, you oppose me, I'm going to have the IRS audit your taxes, right?
Yep.
It's the same sort of shit. It's gross. It is illegal. Retaliation's against the law in most states. But, basically, it's never punished because it's the state. Who's going to punish you?
For one, the joke is funny.
There's that. Yeah, the joke's not funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Two, I think you're right that she may be looking forward to it. Which makes it even that much more funny. Three, it is outrageous. It's like, if I'm not mistaken, the government put in bars around this idea of the president using the IRS to go after people when Nixon did it, meaning after Nixon did it. And correct me if I'm wrong, Ted, you're a student of history. The idea that the federal government is going after people for making jokes about the president is outrageous.
Ridiculous.
That is some like emperor stuff, right? Like, I don't like the joke. You're making fun of me. So
yeah, it's like how Voltaire got sent to prison.
Really?
Yeah. I forget which of the two French Restoration kings of the 1830s it was, but yeah, he was sent to prison for making fun of the king. I mean, it happened all the time. I mean, of course, being French, sent to prison as a notable literary figure in France wasn't like that bad. you ended up, you usually had a chef. You got to bring your books with you. You got proper furnishings. You kind of had a dingy apartment is how it went. It's kind of like the way the mafia guys lived in Goodfellas in prison.
Yeah, it's so pathetic. Like, it's so petty. It's a thin-skinned man who calls himself a tough guy, but prick him and he bleeds and cries about it.
Yeah, pussy.
In the open. Yeah, it's pathetic. It's like, Jimmy Kimmel, whatever you want to think of him, ignoring him removes the story.
I mean, that's the way.
Made a joke. The joke now blows up. because you have now highlighted the fact that you made a joke that
Streisand effect.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It's absurd.
Yeah. Most of us would have never heard that joke. I mean, I never watched Jimmy Kimmel. I think he sucks. All of that late night shit sucks.
But now that you've done this, you've brought it to my attention. I think it's absolutely hilarious. And we've been reading it on air. Like, meaning you've drawn attention to something. Like, you never punch down. You never draw attention to some shit that you don't want to draw attention to. But what's going to do is trying to put a chill on others who are saying stuff. Because those others don't necessarily want to be in the crosshairs. They should stick together, frankly. But they're not going to do it.
No, that you are right about that. That is what they should do. Let's hit a few more comments. And I do want to talk about Gustavo Petro, because that stuff's interesting. Jabari, thanks for the $4.99. Totally agreed, Robbie. I had John on my show, and I know that some of his friends in Connecticut. I get it. Thanks for the dollar. Now that John Kiriakou is a Hollywood star, how long before they put him in a dress? Stop.
Put him in a dress?
I'll tell you one thing about John Kiriakou. He's not going to end up in a dress.
Well, they make this joke that they're all trying to put black men in
dresses. That is not going to happen. Okay, and maybe Bluth Punk on Whistleblowers. Did you guys ever have Barrett Brown on? Have you heard of him? I think he's really paid a price. I have not.
Who is Barrett Brown?
Robbie, do you have a clue who that is?
Not a clue, but I will find out.
Find out if he's good. Bring him on. I'm assuming he's a he. All right. Okay, so Gustavo Petro is hosting sort of an alternate, like now that the COP conference has been so completely taken over by big petroleum and big energy, Colombian President Gustavo Petro, outgoing president, has a conference of 57 international governments to address the climate crisis in a more meaningful way, kind of trying to do what COP started out to do. Here's a quote. There's inertia in the power and the economy of this archaic form of energy, fossil fuels, that leads to death. Undoubtedly, that form of capital can commit suicide, taking with it humanity and other life. The question that needs to be asked is whether capitalism can truly adapt to a non-fossil energy model. We are headed toward barbarism, and barbarism is the prelude to or the very essence of fascism. There's a lot to unpack there.
I can't talk.
So to answer the first question, I don't think that, I think there's no reason. I don't think capitalism requires fossil fuels. I mean, capitalism can live on solar and wind and hydroelectric, of course, right?
Yeah. I mean, if put it this way, if they found a way to, the Star Trek universe is not living off oil, right? They've been able to harvest energy in a way where basically it just needs energy. It doesn't, meaning it, oil is a prelude to energy. It's kind of like money is a conduit between transactions and relationships between human beings. It mines the gap. It does work, or it's an allegory for work. Energy is this allegory for, it could be anything. As you point out, solar, wind, if they found a way to tap the vacuum energy in a glass teacup, they can use that. It doesn't really matter. Solar, they don't care.
Yeah, I don't think that matters at all. The other question is barbarism the prelude or the essence of fascism? I would say that fascism is legalized barbarism. One of the things that in Nazi Germany people noticed, and the reason that the Nuremberg laws and the Night of the Long Knives and Kristallnacht are so notable is because they're either carried out directly by state actors or they're carried out by paramilitary allies of the state who turn a blind eye while their allies are literally breaking the laws of the regime itself, right? Like beating up, killing people, stealing their property on Kristallnacht, vandalizing property. That was all illegal under German and Berlin law, right? Like in 1938. But the state's like, well, these are, you know, the stormtroopers and, oh, well, what are you going to do? That's barbarism. It's legalized barbarism, I think, is the key. You can have barbarism and not have fascism, very clearly.
No, I agree. I was about to say, is that the extremes of fascism?
I think Israel's genocide is an example of that. Everything that the IDF is doing is it runs contrary to Israeli law. I mean, it's against Israeli law to torture people, to rape people, to kill people, confiscate their property, to loot. These people are all breaking their own country's laws, right? But because those laws are not enforced, and like literally now, you know, you have like Palestinians can be subject to the death penalty by hanging, right. But people who commit the same act but who are Israeli Jews cannot. That's fascism, or it's an attribute of fascism. It's not it's not everything you need to make fascism, but it's a big element. I mean, Israel is pretty close to being a full-fledged fascist state at this point.
I think it is a fascist state. I mean, they're pretending like they're democracy or apartheid.
Yeah, there's a veneer of democracy, right?
Yeah, I would call them an apartheid state.
But it's 100% an apartheid state. There's no question about that.
Do you need fascism? Like, you can have petty fascism that still has laws, if that makes sense. Like, meaning, can you have all of those things in a system that's not fascist? Like, meaning, can you have what they call a quote-unquote democracy, and yet people just ignore certain laws? I mean, the emoluments clause for Trump, for example, they're just ignoring it. Meh, you got to pay attention. We're going to maximize profit. Meaning, they ignore laws, even in capitalists or democracies or republics. I mean, they still do the same shit, right?
This is a seriously important question, and I don't mean to beg off on it, but it's 9:59, so we have to call it a show. Look, let's get into it tomorrow. Let's pick up, and we'll make that the beginning of the show tomorrow. All right, guys, thanks everyone for tuning in. You've been watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. We're here Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. I can't do the Q&A show today. I don't know if you and Robbie want to do it. Do you and Robbie want to do it without me?
It's entirely up to JT. If not, I can make clips because okay, I'm still catching up for Monday.
I'll let Rami make clips.
Okay. All right. So no Q&A today at 12 noon. The next Q&A show will be Monday at 12 noon. All right. Okay. And with that, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you tomorrow. Please stay tuned for a TMI show. You guys have to bring me out because of the whole glitch. Okay. Bye.
Be safe all.
Now we are getting ready, boys and girls, to head on over to the TMI show.